Well, this is a symposium about spiritual machines. And if you read the two books, an argument is made almost identically in both books that the increase in computer power as reflected by Moore's Law is going to lead in a few years to ever more powerful computing. We're going to have sensory enhancement, which we already see today. We're going to have neural implants. And sooner or later, we're going to have a neural scan, which is going to destructively take the contents of our consciousness and brains and move it into silicon, at which point humans will be essentially immortal because we will be divorced from the carbon-based embodiment of which we see several hundred examples here in the room today. The fundamental issue underlying both books is that there's an equating between computational power and biology. And I'd like to bring that a little down to earth. For example, on page 95 of Hans's book, it said that in 2010, we'll have computing power of 3,000 MIPS, that this is equivalent to a lizard's brain. Lizards, you recall, are rather sophisticated. They have feet. They move. They actually collect, attack insects in a way that's highly sophisticated. It has been demonstrated to be near mathematically optimum, in fact. It's a highly sophisticated device. And Hans says in 2010 we'll have general purpose perception, manipulation, and mobility of robots because of the 3,000 MIPS. But just before I went to sleep last night, I saw a TV commercial for a 500 megahertz Pentium, which is 1,500 MIPS, more or less, for $1,200 if I call the 800 number quickly. So for twice that, for less than $2,500, we have 3,000 MIPS today. And where's our general purpose perception, manipulation, and mobility?
Just wait, I haven't
started yet. Well, I'm going to let you answer at the end. Let me finish what I have to say. Doug presented a very specific question to several of the panelists. He said, "Is the time scale right on all of this?" And I think the time scale is way wrong. And let me try to make that very specific. Do I believe that computers can do human competitive things? Absolutely. They're examples today. But are they anything like what biology demonstrates? Let me try to make a very specific equation on this point. We're not talking here about consciousness. We're not talking about the Turing test. What we may be talking about is Turing light. In other words, a computer that does something that appears to be equivalent to what a human does. Maybe equivalent to a published paper or a scientific result, maybe equivalent to a patent that somebody has had issued to them over the years. Well, there are many examples of human competitive computer programs. The field of AI has many such examples. There are bridge-playing programs, such as Matt Ginsburg's. But let me focus on evolutionary algorithms for two reasons. One is I know a little more about that, and I have some specific figures. And secondly, evolutionary algorithms are good because they start from a random milieu, and because they start at ground zero, they present a more measurable and comparable way of talking about all of this. There are examples of evolutionary algorithms that are human competitive today. There is a class A checker player that was entirely learned, that is starting with no knowledge, no logic, but using evolutionary algorithms and neural net techniques, plays at class A level in a completely naive starting point. That's an example of what I call a human competitive intelligence. I talked to the author of that work and asked him how much computer time did it take to do that. And it took him 2 months on a 400 megahertz Pentium. That comes out to 10 to the 15th operations. I talked to another person at Brandeis who produced a result that is better than the one in Knuth's book for a particular mathematical problem, and he told me it was 0.8 times 10 to the 15th. And over the years, our group has done a lot of work, and this number keeps coming up, 10 to the 15th. There's 10 to the 12th neurons in the brain. They operate at millisecond speed. So we have the notion of a brain second, 1 BS. And 1 BS... And one brain second seems to be a number that a number of researchers around the world, including people in our own group here in the Stanford, have come about and discovered that you can do certain things. Over a 10-year period, we've had smaller computers, and we've done things, no human competitive things, with the old Lisp machines, which were at 0.02 brain seconds. When we got a slightly bigger computer, we did some very, very rarefied things. But as we passed into the capacity of a brain second, that is, where you could do a petaops 10 to the 15th operation in 2 days, that is, a brain second's worth of computation spread out over 2 days, we started getting interesting results, comparable to the checker player that Fogel did and the Knuth beating sorting network that Joulet did and other things. Things that were patented in the past. We call that human competitive. When we get a bigger computer and moved up to 3 brain seconds, we moved into another category and started generating things that were better than published results, equal to other more complicated patented inventions. And lately, we've done such things as amplifier circuits, placing and routing, as well as topology and sizing, and other patents. And now we're up at 30 brain seconds, which is a multiple of that. Well, let's talk about this amplifier. You all know what an amplifier is. It takes an electrical signal, and it increases it, preferably distortion-free and bias-free. Now let's go back to that lizard. The lizard that supposedly is represented by 3,000 MIPS on page 95. And I would submit to you that an amplifier is only a part of the computational complexity of one neuron in a lizard's brain. It isn't even the full functionality of one neuron. And here we are expending in a particular way, admittedly, but expending 10 to the 17th operations just to get a part of what one lizard neuron does. We aren't moving the lizard around. We aren't seeing insects. We aren't doing this computation, which Jonathan Ruffgarden over at Biology has shown in extensive work in the Caribbean, is practically equivalent to the mathematically known optimum solution for chasing insects. We don't elevate ourselves in the way a lizard does as he's sitting perched on a tree waiting to pounce on an insect, nor do we do any of the other functions of a lizard, of moving around, mating, sleeping, and so forth. So the question I would pose to you after the break, to both authors, is I think you're way off.